The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Take it away, Generalissimo.
Thank you, Hugh. Day four of the Hugh Hewitt Show with Dwayne Patterson filling in for Hugh. Good to have you here. I have a whole bunch of news and video clips and actual, real, honest-to-goodness news that if you listen to this program, you will be up to speed much more than your fellow Americans that get their news from mainstream media, from legacy media. If you were to watch the typical media outlets coming out of D.C. and New York, the news is pretty much almost wall-to-wall Fox News, Tucker Carlson, and Ron DeSantis, and them being the essential new axis of evil, right? There was actual news that took place in D.C. yesterday. There was testimony in several different House and Senate committees that was eyebrow-raising and something that you ought to know about. There's actually some serious conversations being had. We will be talking also in the program today with Jim Talent of the Bipartisan Policy Center. We will get the latest going on over in Israel with the unrest after the attempts to change up the impact of the Supreme Court over in Israel, their judicial reform package. With Dr. Michael Oren, former member of Israeli cabinet there in government. And then we will have a conversation in the third hour about ESG. And there's a bunch of news on the ESG front. And we're going to be talking with Will Hild of ConsumersResearch.org. But let's get to the rundown, shall we? Yesterday in the United States Senate, 33 Senate Democrats joined along with the Republicans to block D.C.'s crime bill, the capitulation of the Democratic Party and the collapse of the House Democrats is almost complete. The House Democrats, who thought that they were going to do the president's bidding because he kind of signaled that he wanted them to cover his flank and oppose a piece of legislation offered by the Republicans that would have overturned a ridiculously weak D.C. crime bill. They said, okay, yes, boss, we're right there with you, boss. We're going to back you up, boss. And 173 House Democrats voted to basically let criminals out of jail even easier than they already are and reduce penalties for crimes. So what happened? The House passed it anyway. It goes on to the Senate. In the process of moving from the House to the Senate, Joe Biden had a change of heart. There's only one problem with Joe Biden's change of heart. He didn't consult with the House Democrats who walked the plank for him first. And he said, you know what? I don't think I'm going to veto that after all. What happened? Well, among other things, a Democratic member of the House of Representatives got accosted in an elevator in D.C. Crime is out of control in the District of Columbia. And even though Joe Biden and the Democrats would love to have two more Democratic senators out of the District of Columbia making it the 51st state, they're starting to realize that rising crime is kind of a bad look for them, and it's not going to do much for their electoral chances down the road. And they've got to start looking a little tougher on crime, even if they don't really believe it at their core. They have to at least look the part. So in the Senate, as the movement started to grow and everybody realized that the House Democrats were stuck out on a limb, not many senators. There were still 14 of the hard progressives, you know, the Mazie Hironos and the Cory Bookers. There were 14 of them from the far left of the Democratic Party edge in the United States Senate that still voted to support basically open crime in the District of Columbia because they think that the D.C. City Council had it right. They went ahead and voted their way, but even Chuck Schumer didn't vote for it. He and 32 other Democratic senators said, yeah, you know, we don't think we want to have a bunch of crime right here in the nation's capital because we've got to come to work here. And we actually don't want to get accosted. We don't want to get mugged. We don't want to get stabbed or shot. There actually should be some police presence here. We should actually have penalties for crimes in the district. It's amazing what happens when it happens in their own backyard. So that bill passed yesterday. It will now go to the president who's going to sign it because politically it's kind of where the finger in the wind is picking up the wind. He feels like he kind of has to politically. Prayers for the recovery of Mitch McConnell. Mitch McConnell, the minority leader, was hospitalized last night after tripping in a hotel in D.C., his spokesman said. This evening, he tripped at a local hotel during a private dinner, David Popp, his spokesman said in a brief statement. He's been admitted to the hospital where he's receiving treatment. He is 81 years old, and if you will recall, he is a recovering polio survivor. He had polio as a young child, and it has affected his gait a little bit on and off, and he does have some balance issues from time to time. This is not unusual for people that have had polio in their life. So prayers for Mitch McConnell. He is not expected to miss much action, at least as of this morning. It looks like it's fairly minor, but prayers go out to Mitch McConnell, as we do to John Fetterman, too. Nobody wishes ill upon John Fetterman or Dianne Feinstein, for that matter. Also, abroad in the Ukraine-Russia war, several killed in early morning attack across Ukraine. Russia launched its broadest barrage of missiles in nearly a month, striking a residential area and knocking out power in multiple areas. This is outside of Kyiv. Three people were killed in Russian shelling in the southern Ukrainian city of Kherson also on Thursday morning. A public transport stop was among the places hit. Joe Biden has announced he's going to release his budget today that is going to have upwards of $2 trillion in new taxes. They think it's going to reduce the deficit over the next few years by $3 trillion. There's only one problem with that. It's being reported as news. It really isn't, because if you think that the House of Representatives under Kevin McCarthy and with Chip Roy and all the Republican members of the House that took their good sweet time in putting Kevin McCarthy in as Speaker because of fiscal concerns, if you think they're going to take Joe Biden's budget and just say, yep, looks good to us, and sign off on it, It's a non-starter. It's dead on arrival. There is not a chance in the world that Joe Biden's budget is going to mean a thing once it hits the Hill. So that's news that really isn't news, but there is more news ahead that we will talk about after the break. I do want to bring to you the news that's going on south of the border in Latin America and Central and South America. And that is our Food for the Poor campaign. We're continuing to raise money to help feed people that are starving, mostly the kids, starving in a lot of these poor countries. We have a broadcaster named John Hudson out of Dallas who has traveled down there for Food for the Poor. And this is what he says and why he does it. Adam.
It's not us over here and them over there, but it's all of us collectively. For a moment, we get to live life together. And the cool thing is, I saw Food for the Poor and what they did, where our money goes. And it was a beautiful thing that impacted my life in such a great way that I can't wait to go back, because I believe in what Food for the Poor does. I've seen it with my own eyes, and it really is a part of my heart and a part of my life now.
Every single day of this week, Hugh has texted me multiple times during the day not to say, hey, how are things going? Or, hey, you're doing a great job. Or, boy, you really suck at this. None of that. All he's doing is, how come you're not doing enough for Food for the Poor? How come everybody else is doing better than you? Well, it's actually not true, but he's trying to get my goat. He's trying to get me to plead with you harder to join Food for the Poor and help these poor kids. 855-359-HOPE, 855-359-4673. There's a banner at the top of HughHewitt.com that will take you to the landing page. Or the easiest way, actually, is just to text Hugh to 91999. Text Hugh to 91999. Help these people. Because we are in the greatest country in the world. And most of you in this audience can help. And if you can, you know you probably should. Text Hugh to 91999. Dwayne Patterson in for Hugh. Welcome back, America. Dwayne Patterson filling in for Hugh Hewitt this week. It is my great pleasure to bring in our regular Israel correspondent. That is Dr. Michael Oren, former member of Israeli government, former deputy prime minister for diplomacy, author of all sorts of great works, including his most recent Swan's War. You can see him on Twitter at Dr. Michael Oren. Michael, good to talk to you. Thanks for being here.
Always good to be with you, Dwayne. Hi.
Okay, so we've got about 5 minutes here. I'm going to clear the runway and let you go because there is lots of news on what's going on in Israel. And there really is only one story that I can see in Israel right now, and that is the growing backlash and the civil unrest, and it's spreading to perhaps the military as well over what the Knesset and the Netanyahu government is trying to do with judicial reform. Can you kind of spell it out for the American audience, Michael?
Well, you put it pretty succinctly, Dwayne. Israel's facing perhaps its greatest crisis. Outside of wars and terror, this is the greatest civil crisis we've ever faced. The government moving fast on legislation that would completely overhaul our judicial system, create a situation where the government will appoint all the judges in the Supreme Court, not unlike in the United States, but unlike in the United States, the Supreme Court will not have a right of judicial review, the right to overturn a piece of legislation by the Knesset. Now, in Israel, we only have two branches of government as opposed to the three in the United States. One of them, the judiciary. If you hamstring the judiciary, then you really have no checks on government, and that's what Israelis are going out to protest today. Not tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, right now blocking our major artery, the Ayalon freeway in Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv is effectively shut down today because of this. People just didn't bother going to work. And then in addition, large segments of the military, of the reserves, one which our defense depends so heavily, you know, Israeli servants are conscripted for 3 years at least for men, 2 years for women. But then you can serve in the reserves. I served into the reserves well into my 50s, active reserves, doing as much as 60 days a year of active reserves. Many reservists, particularly reservists from elite units and the pilots, have said that they simply will not show up for reserve duty if this overall goes through. And this threatens to the very fabric of Israeli society, Dwayne. I've never seen anything like it.
So, you know, I'm an American. I follow what goes on the best I can. We talk to you every week. We read. We do what we can. But the cynical Politico side of me looks at this and says, okay, you have a fairly right-wing Israeli Knesset for the first time in a long time after many years of, you know, pushing, you know, kicking the can down the road. They finally got a fairly conservative government. And you have Bibi Netanyahu, who was always perceived as being not as far right as people within the Knesset would like him to be. He's more of a centrist. And would he actually pursue a conservative agenda? You've got the Supreme Court issue, which was unsustainable the way it was currently perpetrated. It couldn't stay the way it was forever. So, yes, you're going to have a government that's going to push as far as it thinks it can get away with. There's going to be pushback, and at some point, they're going to settle for some happy medium, and that's what the reform's going to be. I mean, can't we get to
that
point?
Hope, Dwayne. That's the hope. I've been long favoring mediation by our president, Isaac Herzog, who's come up with some very, I think, very sound proposals. I mean, everyone agrees that the The status quo is not sustainable. There has to be reform. Israel had the most activist Supreme Court in the world, had the, probably almost the only Supreme Court in the world where sitting judges essentially appointed their successors, and very much in contrast to the American system. And it was just not sustainable.
Right.
Okay, everyone agrees there has to be reform.
So who's the grown up? Who's the grown up to point? Who's the grown up to point to the middle ground and say, "Here's where we can realistically get to. Why don't we get there and end all this nonsense?"
Well, the big problem is that we have politicians who hate one another more than they love the state of Israel, apparently, and because it's there, the compromises are there; they can be reached. The government can claim a victory because there will be reform, and it'll probably be reform that's more on the side of the government than it is on the opposition, because you know that's the nature of things. But in addition, we also have the question of the very extreme racist right-wing ministers in our government who are supporting violence in Judea and Samaria, what's called the West Bank, in the West against Palestinians, and that is further inflaming the situation. We have former heads of the police corps saying they simply will not sit with the current minister in charge of the police, Itamar Ben-Gvir. He's an extreme right-wing racist minister, and they're calling for his dismissal. They're calling for Mr. Netanyahu to dismiss his own minister from the government. So we're not dealing with just one crisis. We're dealing with multiple crises. And again, it has brought Israel to a level of internal...
Ten seconds, Michael, real quick, 10 seconds. Reassure me that with all this going on, that the Israeli government is still keeping an eye on Iranian developments of their nuclear program and won't let it get to critical mass.
Well, they're going to need internal coherence and unity in order to address that problem. I think we're going to get it. That's the good news.
That is good news. Michael Oren, thank you very much. At DR Michael Oren, Dwayne Patterson in for Hugh Hewitt. Hour two, right after the break.
Hey, everybody. It's Dwayne Patterson of the Hugh Hewitt Show. The last time we talked, I was about 3 weeks into a 50-pound weight loss project with myphdweightloss.com. I had lost 16 pounds after 3 weeks. Today, I've lost 50 pounds in just 12 weeks and have been able to keep it off for the last 2 months. And you can, too. MyPhDWeightLoss.com has all the information, or 864-644-1900.
Welcome back, everybody. Dwayne Patterson in for Hugh Hewitt this week. I am joined on the line right now by a very good friend of the program. And of all the regular weekly guests, when I'm in the producer's chair that I get to talk to off air, this is my favorite guest of the group every week, because together, off air, this guest and I basically solve the country's problems every single week, and I'm happy to do it on air as well. This is Jim Talent, a senior fellow over at the Bipartisan Policy Center, former senator of Missouri, and a terrific guy. Hello, Jim. Welcome back to the Hugh Hewitt Show.
Hi, Dwayne. But of course, we're not going to say that our off-air conversations are better than my on-air interviews with you.
Oh, no, we can't say that. That would be totally wrong and inappropriate. We can't do that.
Right.
So, Jim, I don't know if you were listening to the last segment. I played a lot of the testimony from House Foreign Affairs, which was finally looking into the debacle, the catastrophe that was the Afghan withdrawal. Lots of very powerful testimony. Lots of testimony there to just make you angry. You know, the testimony of the sniper that had the terrorist, the bomber in the sights, and he identified it. He knew the threat. He identified the threat. He went up the chain of command and said, "I can take this sucker down right now. Just give me the go." And he couldn't get it. Jim, I'm not naive enough to think that the hearing is going to give the justice that we want. But is it at least going to give information and closure to the people that were impacted the most by this debacle?
Well, yeah, I think it has that value. I mean, the truth always has value. It's what Redfield said in an earlier clip, that what
right.
we really need is the truth here. But what we've needed for the last 2 years is accountability. And look, we can talk about the basic decision of whether we should or shouldn't have left Afghanistan. I was not persuaded that we should have. But the whole thing was a chaotic debacle. And what the committee is going to find, I'm certain, is that there was no effective plan. And the responsibility for that, I think, rests in the National Security Council. I don't think anybody's ever been fired over this. You're not going to fire somebody over this.
That's what's maddening to me, is no head rolled over this thing. They just glossed over it and said, oh, it was a smashing success. How many people died and got left behind, Jim? It's outrageous to claim it's a success. I don't know by what measure you can claim that.
Yeah, I don't like to use the word gaslighting, but that's gaslighting. And what should have happened was, when the president made a decision that he was going to leave, Jake Sullivan of the National Security Council should have got all the agencies together and said, look, we're going to come up with a plan. He should have headmanned it to make sure they did come up with a plan to protect American interests and equity, which included, as you say, getting out Americans, identifying the Afghans we wanted to get out, make sure we get them out. And also, by the way, and the Trump's people would have done it this way, you're right. I mean, if he had decided to leave in such a manner that if something happens where the president wants to change his mind or delay,
you have
or
options.
Do something to, we would have options. And
yes,
it was not there. There was the only agency on the ground that planned, in my opinion, was the Department of Defense. And they were told to get down to a certain number, and they were told to do it a certain way, and they did it. And nobody else was doing their job. I mean, you got to laugh or cry. I really shouldn't laugh about something like this. And then the statement that we're going to have, and this is absolutely right. I mean, I heard for years when I was in office from Vietnam veterans who were struggling with the way we left that country.
Yep.
And we're going to get the same thing for years and years.
For years to come. The emotional damage that was done to that whole cohort of people that served. It's we haven't begun to realize the damage that has done, the toll that has taken. I want to shift to another.
I want
to shift to another, before we run out of time, piece in the Washington Post this morning by Missy Ryan. In race to arm Ukraine, the U.S. now faces cracks in its manufacturing might. The industrial complex. We've talked about this dozens of times, Jim Talent. I'm great with arming Ukraine and helping them do the fight against Russia, but I'm worried about completely emptying the stores and to face China's. How are we going to fix this?
The Washington Post is discovering that our defense industrial base is not adequate.
Right.
Well, know that. I mean, Trump ordered, I think it was in his first year, I wrote a column about it, the first real thorough review of our defense industrial base since Eisenhower. And, of course, it reported what we all knew, which is Gallagher's talked about this a lot.
Yep.
We can't even produce basic precision-guided munition quickly. I mean, there are aspects of that production line that have like a three-year long lead aspect to them, okay? And we have not stockpiled the stuff that we need. So, no, you know, we're not ready, and that makes it difficult for us to support Ukraine or Taiwan in the event the balloon goes up there.
Real quick, Biden's budget is DOA. It's not even news to report he has a budget. The Republicans are going to come out with their budget, but somewhere in the compromise, somewhere in the final budget that happens, if we have one this year, are we going to have money to help beef up the industrial complex?
Yeah, I feel pretty confident that money's going to be there. There's very strong bipartisan support.
Good. Jim Talent of the Bipartisan Policy Center, thank you very much. We at least solved a couple problems in the world. At least I think we did. Welcome back, America. Home stretch of the Hugh Hewitt Show for a Thursday. Dwayne Patterson in for Hugh. We move from the unserious Congressman Daniel Goldman, who apparently is green-lighting children looking at nude pictures online, to a very serious Republican congressperson, Elise Stefanik, who in a press conference with other House Republicans yesterday said this about a very serious subject. Cut 28.
Last week, I'm proud the House passed my bill with bipartisan support, the Rein In Inflation Act. House Republicans and 59 Democrats are rightfully putting critical checks on the Biden administration and holding Joe Biden accountable for his reckless spending fueling inflation. The Senate passed our CRA, which would block Biden's woke ESG rule. Wall Street should not use your retirement savings to fund left-wing political causes.
I am joined by the guy in America above all others that is moving the weather on fighting this woke ESG movement. It's a complicated issue, but it's easy to understand once you have it explained in a very easy way. And I'm joined by Will Hill, the executive director of Consumers First. You can get all the information at www.consumersresearch.org, consumersresearch.org. Will Hill, welcome to the Hugh Hewitt Show. Good to talk to you.
It's great to be with you this morning.
So you've been making all sorts of news this week, buddy. I've been waiting for you all week. Hounsnichols in Axios today has a piece about it's got your fingerprints all over it. Explain to people, give them the elevator pitch of what the ESG thing is, what we're fighting, and why we're fighting it.
Absolutely. Well, it's built by its supporters. It's just another type of investing. Like Warren Buffett is famous for value investing. Well, that's what they say it is. What it really is the ability for them to inject far left, progressive left politics into the corporate boardroom using your investment dollars, your 401ks, your pensions, the federal, state, and local pensions. They are using this as an excuse to push corporate America in a far left direction. We've seen the results of that over the last couple of years. And Consumers Research is just helping consumers stand up and say, enough is enough. Stop using our money to push your politics.
We have good news on this front, and there's good news on all sorts of fronts here. The anti-ESG movement gained steam in the House. A bill passed in the House. It actually passed in a bipartisan fashion in the Senate. Joe Biden is still threatening to veto it, but he is facing an uphill battle at this point because the momentum is moving away. Two quick news stories before we run out of time. The Bank of America CEO, in a story I saw from Reuters this week, Chief Executive Officer Brian Moynihan said that we are actually capitalists as the anti-ESG critics are gaining steam. It sounds like even B of A is starting to get on the right side of this issue or seeing which way the wind is blowing. Are you encouraged by where this movement seems to be going?
Very much so. I don't trust the CEO of Bank of America any farther than I could throw
him. Sure.
Trust
but verify, right?
And under that, no one should do business with him. But he's changing his tune. That's showing is that consumers standing up is having an impact. We need to keep that momentum going. I'm actually headed from this interview to go to the Hill, where they're going to enroll that CRA today and send it to Joe Biden's desk. I'm very encouraged. We got two Democratic senators, Senator Tester and Manchin, to both sign on. This is now a bipartisan movement pushing back against anti-ESG.
Yep.
And as you noted, we put out a report yesterday that lays out a roadmap for Congress over the next 9 to 24 months to do oversight, to call these people to account, people like Larry Fink and BlackRock and other asset managers, as well as the agencies pushing this nonsense, to bring them in and call them to account. We are going to be out there amplifying consumer voices.
Consumers Research with an S, consumersresearch.org is where you go to help out Will and to get up to speed on this movement. One last piece of news that was on this front that was very encouraging. Sean Reyes, the Attorney General of Utah, filed a lawsuit against the National Association of Attorneys General. And that just blew me away because I didn't think that ESG would even impact that. But apparently the tentacles of this go everywhere, Will.
It's incredible. NAG, the National Association of Attorneys Generals, has on hold money that belongs to Utah and other states. And as it turns out, this supposedly bipartisan or nonpartisan organization supposed to represent all the attorney generals across the country was using that money, of course, to push an ESG agenda. And so we applaud Attorney General Reyes in pushing back against this. It's wrong. It's a misuse of public dollars. And NAG ought to either give the money back to the states or figure out how to invest it in a neutral way. Because right now, conservative state dollars are being used to push a far left agenda.
So what will people find when they go to consumersresearch.org? And how can people help you the best?
Absolutely. Well, they can learn more about how they can get involved in the fight. There is legislation moving through about 24, 25 states right now. We need people to call their state elected representatives and say, listen, I don't want my state's pension dollars. I don't want my state's sweep accounts and all my bank accounts. I don't want that used for an ESG purpose. We need to put an end to this because I'll tell you, BlackRock, a year ago when we started, they didn't have a single state lobbyist. Now they have one in all 50 states. This is going to be a big fight, but we are going to win, and we need your help. So please visit us at consumersresearch.org.
Will Hild, you are absolutely one of the most influential guys in America right now on the right on this issue, and I applaud you for it. Consumersresearch.org. Thank you, Will Hild. Dwayne Patterson wrapping up for today. We will be back tomorrow with the Friday edition of the Hugh Hewitt Show. Hope you join me for then. Dwayne Patterson saying thanks a lot. I will talk to you later. Have a great day.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.